Support comes from USC Online, providing exceptional online graduate programs, certificates, and upskilling for current and aspiring professionals. Explore your graduate options today with the University of Southern California at online.usc.edu.
You're listening to Greater LA, KCRW's show that connects you to the places and people and felines of Southern California. I'm Steve Chiotakis. Los Angeles is a city of 4 million people with a lot of noise and a lot of cars, police sirens, helicopters everywhere. But you wouldn't know it if you lived in the Tahitian Terrace Mobile Home Park, across Pacific Coast Highway from the beach just north of Santa Monica. It's quiet here. Just a few birds, coyotes, squirrels, and other wildlife.
It's a dirt road up on top. And that's where the tree was, where the lion was.
Ana Gamaza points toward a narrow asphalt road between decked-out mobile homes with priceless ocean views. This is the place where about 2 months ago, pandemonium broke out at dawn.
All the coyotes in the neighborhood were barking and howling.
Landscapers who came to work early heard the noise and walked up to the fire road.
And they saw the fight. The lion was defending herself from a gang of coyotes.
That's right. It was a mountain lion right there on the road at 6 a.m, surrounded by coyotes, right in front of Tammy Holzman's bedroom window.
I think no one quite knew what was happening because the mountain lions were screaming, and I think it was so early, everyone was a little disoriented. I think there was some damage to some coyotes, but, you know, they were all in survival mode.
She had injured a couple of them, and finally they chased her up to a tree, and that's when the workmen called the police.
It was a very scary morning because the screams of the coyote was like bloody murder. And they were screaming and scared. And you felt like there could be death in the park.
Mountain lions roam the hills that surround us, but that might be over in less than 50 years. A study by the Park Service in UCLA says there's a 99.7% chance they'll be extinct in the Santa Monica and Santa Ana Mountains by then. That's why environmentalists have filed a petition to declare the animals an endangered species. Reporter Kirsten Zilm has the story.
Mountain lions usually avoid people and areas with human activity, but their habitat in the Santa Monica Mountains is shrinking. Housing developments cut off traditional wildlife corridors. The Woolsey Fire destroyed almost half of the mountain lion's territory. Here is J.P. Rose, lawyer with the Center for Biological Diversity.
They're hemmed in by highways, which are preventing them from maintaining genetic diversity, and also die in car collisions and from rat poison. And they're trying to find new places to go, but they keep butting up against housing developments and roads because we haven't built adequate crossing infrastructure and connectivity into our development.
That's why J.P. Rose's group and the Mountain Lion Foundation submitted a petition to the California Fish and Wildlife Commission. They asked the state to protect the iconic large cats under the California Endangered Species Act. That would mean housing developers would have to preserve mountain lions' established pathways and build wildlife crossings over freeways. Developers argue the costs for building housing in the Santa Monica, Santa Ana, and San Gabriel Mountains would go up significantly and might cause some of them to pull their projects. They also say that mountain lions are not really endangered, that there are plenty of pumas in other places. They have a point, says Loyola Marymount University biology professor Eric Strauss.
So at the global scale, you find mountain lions from Canada to South America.
Even in California, there are regions with lots of cougar clans and forests, deserts, and swamplands.
Certain parts of the state and certain parts of the region have densities of mountain lions that we would say are self-regulated. They're figuring out their own densities through competition and dispersion. Here in Southern California, the mountain lions are hemmed in by habitat fragmentation. So we end up with these little pockets of animals that can't disperse, and those males that try are often killed on the roads.
You might have heard that one mountain lion recently managed to cross the 405 freeway between the Skirball and the Getty Center going east one morning between 2 and 4 a.m. P-61 is one of the few to pull that off. Some died while trying. Last fall at the artist's residence Villa Aurora in the Pacific Palisades, several artists heard strange noises at night. And they told the director, Margaret Kleinman. They Googled, what could that be? Margaret and her staff found videos of mountain lions confirming their suspicion. Mating calls. Then, a few days later.
Down the path, and there is this little platform. And we had an umbrella there. And the cat was cozy under the umbrella and rolled up and looked at me a little bit, but then thought, I don't know what she thought. But
the mountain lion hung out quietly for a few hours.
I have to say, it was wonderful. Such a gracious, fabulously looking, beautiful animal. And almost wanted to pet him or her, but I stayed away about 15 meters, 45 feet, and thought it was a wonderful, wonderful experience. A wonderfully round, beautiful cat face with these pointy ears, and just looked so gorgeous. And of course, I also admired that huge tail by comparison to the relatively small body of that, I guess, young animal. Had a wonderful tail.
If the species goes extinct, Southern Californians would lose more than these kinds of magic encounters with wildlife, says petition co-author J.P. Rose. The loss would have big ripple effects, as other regions show.
If we look to the eastern U.S., where cougars are now extinct, deer populations have increased significantly, leading to overgrazed vegetation, loss of biodiversity, and increase in ticks and actually tick-borne illness among humans. So the loss of mountain lions here in Southern California would have profound repercussions, not just on ecosystems, but also on people.
It will take the Department of Fish and Wildlife months to decide whether to list mountain lions as an endangered species. LMU biology professor Eric Strauss calls this a wicked problem.
Ultimately, improving the ecosystem is in everybody's best interest. But the question is, how does the recovery plan impact both the animal and the human stakeholders?
By the way, the mountain lion that coyotes chased into a tree at the Tahitian Terrace was tranquilized, got a GPS tracking collar and a name. P-75 was released into the Santa Monica Mountains. And even though Tammy was terrified when she woke up to the screams, she is all for putting cougars under the Endangered Species Act, as is everyone I talk to who has seen a mountain lion. For KCRW, I'm Kerstin Sim.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
So one tactic among LA groups is to save the mountain lions, which also, by the way, are known as cougars or panthers or pumas, by officially declaring them endangered species. Caltrans, however, is focused on a different approach. Enter the wildlife crossing at Liberty Canyon. It's not exactly a pride in Africa, but it's a bridge in greater L.A. over the 101 freeway where wildlife would be able to pass over that 10-lane concrete thoroughfare to be able to roam freely without the danger of getting hit by a car. But that bridge is going to be costly and even, perhaps, disruptive. KCRW's Frances Anderton has been looking into this project. She's here with me now to talk about it. Hi, Frances.
Hello, Steve.
Nothing like a little Lion King to wake you up, right? Yeah.
Arr!
Why a bridge, though? Why do we need a bridge for mountain lions or pumas or cougars?
Well, because what we're seeing is that mountain lions have started to get constrained within a small environment south and west of the 101. Lions need room to roam. The result is there's infighting between the animals, there's inbreeding, there's reduced genetic diversity, and even a risk that these mountain lions could actually become extinct.
So how would this bridge work? I mean, are they just going to put a concrete slab, or will there be signs? I mean, what will lead them to cross the freeway?
They're actually calling it an overcrossing because it would be a crossing over a freeway, and it is a rather very large piece of infrastructure. There would be a lot of concrete in it. It would cross the 101 freeway in Agoura Hills, just west of Liberty Canyon Road. It would connect the Santa Monica Mountains to the south with Simi Hills to the north. It would cross 10 lanes of freeway as well as a parallel collector road called Agoura Road, and this would allow mountain lions and other wildlife to safely cross the freeway. These are animals that already do come up to the freeway and are trapped because the freeway is a wall. And we should say that this would be building on crossings that are appearing in places all over the world. It's just none has been done at this scale.
At this scale in this area. And I remember, so on the 210 freeway, you know, when you're in the San Gabriel Valley, right, and you're on that stretch of freeway, you see this overpass and there's like a park. You ever seen this? It's like a lot of green space, trees and all that, and it's a really long tunnel that you go through. Is it going to be something akin to that?
So, yes, essentially it would have to take on some of the trappings of the park because as we understand it, or as I understand it from people who know far more than I do, animals are not going to walk onto a concrete bridge. Absolutely no way. They tend to, for starters, they tend to move around in the dark. They don't move around when humans are there. And but absolutely. So designers are looking at ways to entice animals onto such a crossing, but also to do it in a way that is affordable. When we first looked into this a year ago, at that point, there was talk of having this concrete bridge on which you'd put several feet of soil as well as a lot of vegetation. Now, just recently, the team that is working on this held a design charrette. That is kind of an intensive design session where they brought in experts in the design of these crossings. And at that, they looked at ways in which to be able to lure the animals with the necessary vegetation and other devices, but also in ways that would be actually affordable. So interestingly, they talked about using what they call geoforms. That would be basically styrofoam or other lightweight materials to, in some parts of the bridge, emulate nature. Listen to Beth Pratt. She's the California Regional Executive Director for the National Wildlife Federation. She leads the Save LA Cougars campaign, which is doing the fundraising for this project.
Can you use geoforms and mimic the landscape in some places so that you get the load down, which of course would reduce the engineering costs? Looking at really creative ways to engineer this thing, because I think we tend to think of this as a, you know, a landscape restoration project, but it's not. It's how do you best get wildlife across the road project, and that is a little different than if you were putting a park in, you know, for people on, you know, or restoring a landscape.
Once they build it, Francis Anderton, do we have a guarantee? I mean, you know, the old axiom, if you build it, will they come? And that's the question, I guess, of the hour.
Well, there's absolutely no guarantee because obviously there has been nothing built like this at this scale to sort of test the concept.
Well, However, there have been other crossings.
There have been many other crossings, and certainly the design team, which Caltrans is involved with this, a designer named Clark Stevens, who we spoke with last year. And at that point, he said something that gives them confidence that this is the right place to put this crossing is that this is a point where they know that mountain lions approach both sides. Again, they know that with certain vegetation, you can attract animals. He also said that what's really important to understand is this would not be simply a crossing, a bridge, a piece of architecture. He says it's a piece of architecture within what they're calling a habitat restoration project. You have to have habitat at both ends where the animals feel comfortable and safe roaming. So that's very much part of the thinking.
This is all modeled, Francis, for P22. P22 is like this hero of mountain lions in greater LA. We see the pictures, we know where P22 is roaming, we know the danger that P22's brethren and sistren have been dealing with in trying to cross these freeways. So why is P22 striking such an emotional chord with people?
Well, it's very interesting that you bring up P22, because P22 is the mountain lion who has somehow got trapped within Griffith Park. People don't know exactly how he got there, but Paw Point P22 roams alone without anyone to mate with. He has a very sad story attached, but what made him resonate with people is that he was caught on camera. Not only was he caught on camera, he was caught on camera looking like a movie star. Plaintive, handsome lion, plaintive eyes. We all feel sorry for him. He has, as you say, become kind of the poster child for this campaign, even though poor P22 wouldn't personally benefit from this crossing were it to be realised. But anyway, around P22, a big campaign has been built. Beth Pratt is a remarkably charismatic person who races around California and the country raising money for this project, and she carries a cardboard cutout of P22 wherever she goes. So yes, there's something sort of very LA about this, or very Hollywood. You know, we've got the movie star that's carrying the campaign.
Let's do the lightning round as we wrap things up, because number one, how's this going to be paid for? How is this coming out of the state budget? Is Caltrans getting it out of their money? How's this going to work?
It is primarily private funds. However, 20% of the funding is coming from Caltrans, and they are providing a team of engineers that's working on this.
When will they break ground on this, and when will it be finished?
They hope to break ground in 2021. They hope then to finish in 2023. They've raised $13.4 million of the projected $80 million cost. They say they're at final design and engineering phase, and they're preparing blueprints.
And are there people opposed to it?
Yes, absolutely. Not everybody romanticizes mountain lions. In fact, last year when we looked into this, we did talk to a Malibu resident. He's named Wendell Phillips. He says his alpacas were killed by a mountain lion called P45. He thinks the crossing idea is nutty. He says lions are apex predators. He says if they're not dangerous enough, this crossing would make it possible also for bears to come in. He said in quotes, if you think a 150-pound mountain lion is a problem in the dark, just wait till you run into a 400-pound black bear. He's not alone in this view, but generally there is a tremendous, I think your earlier speaker talked about ways in which to preserve mountain lions in the face of the species becoming more and more endangered. There is a kind of emotional pull to maintaining our apex predators.
Especially when you carry a cardboard copy of it. Right?
From town to town. Has been likened to the Brad Pitt of mountain lions.
So LA, isn't it? It's so LA, Frances. It really is. We shall see. Frances Anderton, of course, host of Design and Architecture Tuesdays right here on KCRW. Frances, thank you.
You're very welcome, Steve.
Well, check us out anytime online at kcrw.com/greaterLA, and you can subscribe to the podcast too. Listen anytime, and do that at the KCRW app, inside Apple Podcasts, or anywhere you get your podcasts. Just search for Greater LA. Lions and tigers and tortillas. Oh my. Gustavo Arellano is next on Greater LA. Listening to KCRW's Greater LA. I'm Steve Chiotakis. It is Monday, which means we have Gustavo Arellano with the Orange County Line. But today, we're going to take a moment to talk about something near and dear to Gustavo's heart, tortillas. Thankfully, he says, there is more to life than the sad, tasteless pack of supermarket tortillas in your refrigerator. And to prove the point, Gustavo is teaming up with KCRW for Gustavo's Great Tortilla Tournament, and the competition is rolling. Here to tell us more about it, the bracket's creator and namesake, KCRW's Gustavo Arellano. Hey, Gustavo.
Hola, Steve.
So there were 64 tortillas, 32 flour, 32 corn, that faced off in the first round of the competition. How did those tortillas qualify? Who's tasting all these tortillas, Gustavo?
So it's just like a sports tournament. So there's four brackets, seeded number 1 through 16. Nick Liao, the producer for Good Food, and Evan Kleiman, host for Good Food, they have the corn side. And then me and KCRW communications manager Connie Alvarez, we have the flour side. And yeah, we just eat them. We face them off against each other. So we go 64 to 32. Right now, we're at the Suave 16 or Suave 16, depending on your language. And they're the 16 finalists right now.
This year, you have broadened the scope of the tournament to include more restaurants than last year. Some restaurants in Ventura County are in the mix. Why did you expand the reach, if you will, the footprint?
We're going all the way from Oxnard to San Juan Capistrano to India, where the oldest tortilleria in Southern California, Ariolas, has been going on for 92 years. And the reason we started this tortilla tournament is not just obviously to eat tortillas because they're so good and trying to figure out which are the best in Southern California, but really tell the stories of these tortillerias. Like most every region in Southern California has neighborhood tortillerias that go back decades. Like not just East LA, by the way. Like in this year's version of the tortilla tournament, we have tortillerias in Compton, in Linwood, Hawaiian Gardens even. Julian's Tortilleria has been there since 1986. So I'm just interested in finding out all these stories. Who are these people? How do they make their tortillas? And more importantly, which is better?
What kind of stories are you hearing? I mean, what is it about these places? A lot of these places are family run. They've been in the family for decades, right?
Yeah, so Ariolas has been there since 1924. It started out in a household of two immigrants from Mexico. Now it's in its fourth generation of ownership, run by 30-some-year-olds who are trying to expand its presence outside of the Coachella Valley. Then you have someone like Kernel of Truth Organics, based out of Boyle Heights. They're part of the Suave 16. They were a finalist last year in our Fuerte 4 finale. And they're only a couple years old, but their whole thing, they make corn tortillas, and they use organic, non-GMO corn. Because what they're trying to argue to the rest of Southern California is you don't know what a corn tortilla tastes like because a lot of the corn that you're eating is trash, frankly. And we're working with farmers who get the best tortillas imaginable. And you taste the Kernel of Truth organic tortillas. They're not in my category, but oh my Lord, they taste super just corn rich, earthy. And you look at the tortilla, like it's almost brown. That's how dark the yellow is. It's amazing.
I always feel ashamed, Gustavo, when I go to a taqueria and I choose a flour tortilla instead of a corn tortilla. Should I be ashamed of that?
Absolutely not. And that's another reason why we started this tortilla tournament is because there are some people that prefer flour. And flour historically was part of northern Mexico, so the rest of Mexico never tasted it. My mom, for instance, she never had a flour tortilla until she came to the United States in the mid-1960s. But now there's also a push to make flour tortillas taste better. So the winner from last year, Sonora Town, which is a top seed and this year, they're based in downtown LA. The owners, they get their flour from the state of Sonora, right on the U.S.-Mexico border. It's heirloom flour, and you taste these tortillas, my Lord. You hold it up to the light. You could see your hand through it. They're so translucent, and you could make them into a burrito and a quesadilla. Then the taste is just weedy and wonderful and just unlike anything you buy at, say, you know, supermarkets, a big national chains. And so there's a lot of tortillerias like that. Another famous flour tortilla in Southern California is La Azteca Tortilleria in East L.A. They've been there, I believe, since the 1950s. They use a little bit more lard and salt in their tortilla, but it's all this history. And more importantly, like if you're going to tell someone, oh, flour tortilla is not authentic, well, tell that to the people who have been eating them in Mexico, flour tortillas, for centuries.
You mentioned Sonora Town. They're now in the final 16. So they're making
the Suave 16.
The Suave 16. So they're making it again.
Oh, yeah. And you also have people like Las Cuatro Milpas in San Bernardino. So this is a place is off the old Route 66, has been making handmade tortillas for over 50 years. You also have this awesome little chain, Jimenez Ranch Market, which has locations in Riverside, Pomona, and Santa Ana or Santana. They make these, you have to order them in advance, and they puff up like almost like It's almost like a puff pastry. That's how big it gets, and it's just so fluffy. And they put baking flour at the very end, and then of course La Monarca, which people in West LA know, that famous panaderia. They're actually one of the few. I think it's the last one left that makes mass-produced flour tortillas. And if you go to any La Monarca bakery, you could buy these small little packs. But they also use heirloom corn from Sonora, so they're small, but you know they sell them to you raw. But once you cook up, when you put it on the griddle, or as us Mexicans call it, the comal, you could hear it crackling, coming up to life. And at the end, it tastes just like a good chicharrón.
Oh, my God, I'm so hungry. It's time to wrap it up.
Oh, yeah, wrap it up. And please, let's finish September 8th. That's when the grand finale. We're going to have KCRW at La Plaza near Olvera Street from 3 to 7 p.m. Free samples, free everything for tortilla art. It's going to be wonderful. And some of the vendors that compete in the tortilla tournament as well.
And what's the prize, Gustavo?
The golden tortilla. Just literally a tortilla emblazoned with gold. Probably fake gold, of course.
Well, I hope the tortilla is fake, too.
No, you have to use a real one. And to keep up with all the competition, go to kcrw.com/tortilla. That's where you make your RSVP. A lot of fun, all a celebration of Greater LA.
All right, Gustavo Arellano, features writer for the LA Times, Metro Desk, one of the judges, of course, for KCRW and Gustavo's Great Tortilla Tournament, or as we call it, Gustavo, what do we call it? The Tour Tournament.
The Tour Tournament.
The Tour Tournament. Gustavo, thanks.
Gracias.
Well, that's it for today. Boy, this show was stuffed with a lot of things. Like, no, that was really bad. Tomorrow, a tour of the grunge and grit of a Hollywood that's disappearing before our eyes. Author and musician and magician Rob Zabrecki takes us along for the ride. And Jason Bentley takes us down memory lane as he exits Morning Becomes Eclectic later this week. Can you believe it? He's been here 10 years and he's leaving. Last day Friday, we'll have an interview with him tomorrow. It's The Business next on KCRW. Jenna Cagle, Sarah Pellegrini, Catherine Barnes, Sonia Geis, PJ Shahamat, Phil Richards, Ray Guarna, and Christian Bordahl make this show happen. I'm Steve Chiotakis. Have yourself a good day.